on These Truthers or Self at George, what's the name of the show? All right. It's the Karen Testerman Show. These truths are self-evident or something like that. This is Kevin Smith, though, filling in for Jennifer. It was last minute.
Oh, my God, Kevin. You're on radio. This is a professional operation.
People listen to this show on a regular basis. They know what they're listening to.
Oh, my God.
But this is
if Karen Testerman's listening, she is never going to invite you back.
I'll get it right next time. I'll look it up at the break, and we'll get the right name at the next break. Folks, before we bring Grant Bossy in, I just want to give you this bit of breaking news we just have over the wire. Of course, last night was the Charm Offensive dinner that was hosted by President Barack Obama with 10 senators, including our junior senator right here in New Hampshire, Kelly Ayotte, the other 9 Republican senators, of course. And the breaking news is that President Obama picked up the tab from that dinner. So the Republicans did not pay for the dinner. President Obama ended up picking up the tab. And with that, what a great segue into our next guest, the guy who always picks up the tab, Mr. Grant Bossy from New Hampshire Watchdog. Grant, thanks for joining us on the program this morning.
Kevin, I was going to pick up the tab, but after sequestration, we're just not going to be able to do it. Sorry.
Oh. So you're only going to pick up 80% of the tab now, is what you're telling me?
Well, we're only going to increase the tab by 5% instead of 7%, and we'll deal with those massive cuts.
Grant, thanks for joining us on the show this morning. Of course, you have worked in the past for the Josiah Bartlett Center for Public Policy, a great think tank organization here in the state of New Hampshire. You have your own independent organization, New Hampshire Watchdog, which does a great analysis of public policy here in the state of New Hampshire. You write some great articles on there, and I would invite any person listening to the show to go to that website, New Hampshire Watchdog, and check out what Grant is doing. But Grant, you've been really on top of Maggie Hassan's budget, and as the saying often goes, the devil's in the details. And the other day she finally released the second part of the budget, House Bill 2, which explains a lot of the numbers in what is House Bill 1. I'm wondering if you can perhaps tell us kind of what's in House Bill 2. What are the things that we didn't know about previously before she released it? And what are the things that perhaps there was more light shed on certain areas in House Bill 2, some of the more significant areas?
Well, I wonder why we waited 3 weeks for this, because there's really not a whole lot of things that we couldn't have guessed back in November when she won the election. It took almost half of the House's time to consider this bill.
Ironically, by the way, Grant, as somebody who was paying attention to the campaign ads of gubernatorial candidates in the election, there was an ad for then candidate Maggie Hassan, which started out, the ad actually started out by saying the first job of governor is to present a balanced budget. That is the irony of that. That was her campaign ad, and then yet we waited for weeks for this budget, for the budget details to come out. But sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, it's only balanced if you count on the revenues that she says are going to come in. Most controversial are the $80 million in gambling revenues from a casino that isn't yet legal. And we don't know if the House is going to have to vote on the revenue from the casino before they decide whether to approve a casino. So we don't know if that $80 million is ever going to come in. She is estimating a large increase in Medicaid enhancement tax revenue. That could be up to $200 million short if Medicaid enhancement taxes don't dramatically increase over the next 2 years. That's what Chuck Morse estimates the problem will be.
Well, and Grant, just explain to our listeners for a second, the changes that have taken place over the last 2 years in the Medicaid enhancement tax and why there's good reason to believe that revenues from it won't be at the levels that she's predicting they will be at.
Medicaid enhancement tax has been on the books for a while. It was it was half of Medi-Scam, where the state would tax hospitals and then get matching funds from the federal government and then refund the tax payments the same day through what's called the disproportionate share hospital program. So we take the money out, we get the feds to match it, we give the money back, and then we keep the extra money that the feds sent. The legislature 2 years ago turned the MET from a fake tax to a real tax. Hospitals don't get all the money back that they pay. So they're actually paying attention to the tax bill when it shows up. If you're going to get your money back, you don't pay a whole lot of attention. You don't hire accountants. You just pay it and you get it back the next afternoon, and it's a hassle, but it doesn't cost you money.
Well, and like you were just saying, much like we would do on a personal level when we're figuring out our taxes, you know, you hire accountants to look at where you can get deductions and where you can get, you know, credits to limit your tax liability. Now that the hospitals are actually paying this real tax, correct me if I'm wrong, they're actually looking at ways to limit their tax liability to the state. Is that correct?
Yeah, of course they would, as anybody, any taxpayer would. And so the revenues aren't coming in at the same level that the legislature had hoped for. They basically said, well, we'll get the same amount of money we got last year. And it turns out, no, the hospitals are taking a closer look at their tax bill and trying to reduce their tax exposure. The Hassan budget not only says, are we going to get what we got last year, it's going to grow substantially over the next 2 years. At the same time, hospitals are still disputing their current tax payments. So that's very speculative to assume that Medicaid enhancement tax revenues are going to suddenly shoot through the roof. And every dollar that doesn't come in, well, that's another dollar of federal money that doesn't come in. So every mistake is twice as bad.
Now, Grant, doesn't she predicate some of that as well on the fact that she says she's going to give more money back to the hospitals than what the last legislature did?
She says she is, but that she's not giving all of it back. I don't think she's bringing back Metascam in all its glory, which means the hospitals can still save money by disputing their Medicaid enhancement tax bill. What they get back is no longer tied to what they pay in MET. So they're going to question their MET bill, like they're doing now.
So it'll be like Metascam. Metascam Jr.
Yeah, sort of. If you remove the relationship, if what you pay isn't the same as what you get back, then it's not quite a scam.
Right.
It's just, you know, we're still trying to get matching funds from the federal government.
Right.
But the feds aren't going to shut us down and say we can't do that anymore the way they've been trying to get us to stop Metascam for a decade. Now, last year we finally stopped doing it. And that came with consequences because the hospital said, well, we didn't want you to stop giving us the money back. We wanted you to stop taxing us in the first place.
Yeah.
Lots of other things in the budget that we're just finding out about now. She's delaying some of the business tax reforms that the last legislature passed.
Yeah, let's talk.
Carry forward provisions. So that's going to be delayed for a year. So that's higher business taxes.
I was going to say, because these suspension of these business tax reforms that were passed by the last legislature that she's now saying she's delaying or suspending in her budget, this amounts to a tax increase on businesses in the state of New Hampshire, does it not?
Yeah, the legislature got together and on a fairly bipartisan basis said, you know what, this is a bad tax policy, let's fix it. And the governor says, yeah, it's still a bad policy, but we're going to keep it in place an extra year because we need the revenue. We want the money. So you're keeping a bad policy on the books. She's not saying repeal it. She's not saying it's a bad idea. She's just saying let's wait a year.
And how much?
So I'm not sure what the total impact of those provisions would be. But, you know, it's businesses dealing with a bad tax policy. It essentially says whether you can write off your business profit tax against the business enterprise tax in a future year.
Right.
And leads to capital investment. If you can take a loss in 1 year by building your business, constructing an addition, doing something like that, and then write that off against your taxes going forward, you're more likely to do that.
Sure.
So this is going to prevent businesses from expanding and reinvesting in themselves for another year. And it's going to put off a lot of jobs until 2015.
Right. Well, and I think there was also another provision in there that increased the threshold of companies that actually had to pay the business enterprise tax, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, the threshold is also delayed a year. So smaller companies will have to be paying that BET, which is a tax on the first dollar that comes in the door of your business. They're going to have to pay it for an extra year, a year longer. We said it was going away, and now the governor says, wants to break that promise and say, no, it's not going away for at least another year. But what we've seen with other parts of the budget is once the legislature temporarily suspends something, it's really easy to keep suspending it. So the governor's budget continues the meals and rooms tax at its current level. that was supposed to be temporarily frozen for a year or two. And now we're going on 5 years, and towns haven't seen any increase in that revenue.
Right.
She continues the suspension of revenue sharing with towns that went away under the Lynch budget. And that was supposed to be temporarily suspended. This was suspended for 2 more years. She suspends the building aid program. It's kind of like when the legislature temporarily increased the rooms and meals tax to 8%. Well, that just kept getting extended and extended and extended. It eventually became permanent, and then they tried to raise it to 9 and had to drop it down to 8. So things that government tries to do temporarily tend to stick around a lot longer, and that's what the governor is trying to do with these business taxes, is temporarily put off reforms that New Hampshire businesses have been calling for years.
Right. Well, and what's interesting, too, is that here's a governor who railed and continues to against the supposedly draconian budget of the last Republican legislature. But yet now she's going, well, I kind of liked that provision over there, so we're going to keep that in place. And, oh, I liked that suspension you did there, so we'll keep that in place too. So it seems to me that when it's convenient for her to like the Republican legislature's budget, she's doing it, and when it's convenient for her to rail against it, depending on what audience she's talking to, she'll do that as well. Another thing that strikes me about House Bill 2, and I'm wondering how much of this there is that goes on in it. So I know one of the provisions in there, she has a repeal of the education tax credit scholarship, which I had talked about with Jennifer Horn earlier. My question about that is that almost seems like something that should be done outside of the budget. It seems like it should be a separate piece of legislation, in which I know it is in the House right now. But she's included that in her budget. Are there other parts of her budget in HB2 where she's looking for sweeping changes in the law in order to find revenue from somewhere else?
Well, the budget is the single most important piece of legislation that the House and Senate are going to consider. And it's probably more important than all the other pieces combined, because everything state government does goes through the budget. So you can manage your agencies. There's a lot of restructuring in this budget, restructuring of the Department of Revenue and Economic Development, restructuring of Fish and Game, extending the moratorium on New Hampshire nursing homes, giving the Commissioner of Health and Human Services power to restructure his department. So there's a lot of policy that gets tied to the money we spend.
Right.
So trying to separate these decisions is tough. And there are small programs that really have no budget impact. In fact, the tax scholarship program that passed last year actually saves the state money.
Yeah, can you, for our listeners who are listening to this, will you explain to them on how, because she's saying if we repeal that education that scholarship, the tax credit, that's going to somehow save the state money and bring in revenue, when in fact it's actually going to cost the state more money to repeal it. But will you explain that to our listeners?
Sure. Well, it's a tax credit program. So a business gives to a scholarship organization that's been approved by the state, monitored by the state, and they get an 85% tax credit for the money they give for scholarships up to $2,500. Means tested, so that the lower income kids are the ones getting them. So the business saves a little money on their tax bill. The money goes to a scholarship organization that awards it to parents that can use it to pick any school they want.
Right.
But when they choose a school, whether it's the neighboring public school, a private school, a charter school, when they choose to leave their local school district that happens to be closest to their house, they also leave the state adequacy system. So their kid no longer gets, the state no longer has to provide an adequacy payment to educate that kid. So for the price of an average scholarship of $2,500, the state is saving $5,000 to $8,000 in adequacy payments.
Right.
So it's money that the state no longer has to send to the local school district, which is a lot more than what the state is foregoing
right. In
tax revenues from the tax credits, because you're basically taking yourself out of that state education system and choosing a different school. Even if it's another public school,
right.
If you're in Manchester and you send your kid to Bedford or Pinkerton, then the state no longer has to make that adequacy payment. You and your scholarship organization and the parents are responsible for paying that tuition.
Right.
And it saves money, and it increases choice, and it gives local schools an incentive to start attracting customers instead of warehousing students.
Well,
it's a very elegant program. It's a very well-crafted program, and it saves taxpayers money.
Well, and I would remind the listeners, too, and correct me if I'm wrong, Grant, but for those people out there thinking, oh, well, so if those students leave their local district school and the state's no longer sending the adequacy money to that local district, I believe the amount of money that a district can, quote-unquote, lose from adequacy funding is capped at something like 1%. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think the first year it's something like 0.5%.
Half a percent.
Yeah, the idea was, well, what if there's one school that loses all these kids to the scholarship program? Well, that's probably not going to happen. But
right.
If it does, the state would cap the impact on any individual school district to make sure there's no rush. Now, if there's a school where that many parents are rushing to go pay for another school, I think that's something the local school board needs to address.
We've got a bigger issue, right?
And we've got bigger issues. And that's the whole problem with public education right now is there are good schools, but there are also bad schools.
Right.
And there are also good schools that are bad for specific students. So this has a little accountability in it. And the critics in the union say, oh, there's no accountability.
Right.
Well, that's false. All these schools are still regulated by the state. But the ultimate accountability is a parent with a choice.
Right, right. Absolutely. Grant, we have only got about a minute left. And one more quick thing I want to get in here is can you just very briefly go over how in the governor's budget she's given herself pretty much broad authority to raid any dedicated fund in the state, doesn't have to go through legislative approval, but has broad authority to do this. Can you just expand on that briefly?
Sure. Well, we talked about the Medicaid enhancement tax. Another tax that has been short is the cigarette tax hasn't brought in as much revenue as projected. So the state has a small deficit, about $25 million that it's got to fill by the end of June. The governor wants to give herself the ability to cover that deficit by raiding dedicated funds. Time-honored tradition, the legislature loves raiding dedicated funds. So you pay a fee to Fish and Game. The REGI program is a dedicated fund. There's all sorts of little pots of money that are supposed to be funded through user fees that are sitting around. And every once in a while, the legislature basically goes through the couch cushions looking for loose change and pulls money out of these dedicated funds. Traditionally, the governor will say, well, I want $1 million here, $2 million here, $500,000 there, and the legislature approves it. Or the governor says, let me sweep the dedicated funds, and then I'll go to the fiscal committee or
right.
to the executive council, and I'll get somebody else to sign off on this. The governor in her budget doesn't include any of those checks and balances. She basically says, give me the authority to raid dedicated funds in any amount.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's not liberal or conservative. That's just bad government. No one branch of government should ever have unlimited authority to do anything. And somebody should have to look at this and say, no, governor, we don't want you taking money out of that. For instance, if John Lynch had unlimited authority, he could have raided the JUA fund
right.
without any check,
right.
The Joint Underwriting Authority, and the New Hampshire Supreme Court ultimately decided that he couldn't do that. But there would have been no legislature standing in the way to say, no, you can't do that, Governor.
Right. Grant, unfortunately, I got a hard break coming up, and I have to let you run. But this has been very enlightening, as always. I appreciate you coming on, making the time to come on and inform our listeners about all of these different issues. If I sub again, you promise to come on again?
Only if you learn the name of the show.
I promise you at the break, it's We Hold These Truths. We Hold These Truths with Karen Testerman. Folks, we're going to be right back after the break. We'll be talking with Greg Moore. Grant Bossy, thank you very much.